Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. And yes, we are back here with the second edition of our special coverage from Haiti, special edition of The Punch Out. I'm your host, Eugene Perrier, as always. We saw many things today in the course of moving around Port-au-Prince. We were in popular neighborhoods, La Saline, Bel Air. We had the opportunity to chat with workers working in one of the largest industrial parks here, in where they make many, many clothes for many places around the world, but especially the United States and Canada. We also, just in the course of moving around the city, saw quite a bit of Port-au-Prince. I think in terms of context, one of the important things for people to know, and we alluded to this yesterday, we've talked about it quite a bit in our discussion on the discussions on the Punch Out previously about the ongoing situation in Haiti, is the depth of neoliberalism that exists in this country. I mean, you think about the coverage you often see of Haiti. For instance, I wouldn't be surprised if you had seen some or more than some footage of a lot of trash in the street. But one thing that you never hear is never told to you when you see those kind of, you know, almost, you know, poverty porn sort of images that come out in relationship to Haiti is the fact that I haven't seen one trash can the entire time I've been here. I've seen one garbage truck so far, which I think was private. And then I saw a brother with a wheelbarrow just cleaning up trash in front of the stalls of street vendors, I'm assuming for some small amount of pay. And I say that just to say there really are no public services as far as we can see. I mean, there's some. I mean, it's not as if there is nothing. But I mean, the one that you see the most is the police. We've seen one fire station. But it's obvious whether we're talking about electricity, whether we're talking about water, whether we're talking about roads, whether we're talking about education. As we mentioned yesterday, most of the schools are privatized here. You know, it's just unbelievable the lack of public services that exist here in Haiti to serve people. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. The other element of it that I think speaks so much to neoliberalism is there are many things available on the streets to buy, really pretty much anything you want. There's a very large informal economy here in Haiti, so many, many people survive by selling things on the street. And if you have money, pretty much what you want is easy to get. I mean, we saw a Porsche dealership today, Land Rovers, and of course, you know, all the typical American brands that you can imagine in terms of food and drinks and other international brands. All that's out there. There's certainly food and other things that are for sale. But again, if you can't pay for it, you don't have access to it. So on really every single level, this is an extremely neoliberal economy. And when you see all this, it's not that hard to understand the anger of the people in the streets who are protesting. Of course, many of the things that they are laying out is this total lack of development and the absolute just incomplete corruption that exists at the level of the government, and how most of the state of affairs that I just mentioned, really, quite frankly, all of the state of affairs I just mentioned are not accidental, but in fact planned. I mean, this is what the government and the governmental elites, this is how they want to run the country. They want to just sell off the riches, whether it be the agricultural produce, whether it be gold, which is something a lot of people don't know about. There's a lot of gold mining here in Haiti, whether it be the labor of people. One of the main export industry, actually, in Haiti is textiles. And the majority of those are sent to the United States, secondarily Canada. But the United States has something called the HOPE Act, which allows goods, textile goods, that come from Haiti to enter into the United States tariff-free. So you get all of these sweatshops that set up here and terribly exploit Haitian labor in order to make these clothes and make certainly a lot of money for the sweatshop owners, but also for the international brands first and foremost. And we were able to talk to a number of workers, and we'll be bringing you more on their story. We have video, we have extensive audio as we move forward. But we were able to talk to workers at a company called Go Haiti, who explained many different deprivations to us. I mean, there's no health care. There's no provisions for health and safety. There is extreme uncleanliness in the plant. There is no overtime at all. So people work 9-10 hours a day, sometimes more than that. And again, zero overtime for any of that. So that's absolutely crucial. They're organized in a union, but there is significant repression of the union. In fact, they told us that if we weren't there, the fact that they were having a meeting, that they'd gathered their committee all together there in the industrial park, that they all would have been arrested. And we don't know exactly what happened, but there was seemed to be some corporate surveillance of that meeting and some menacing looking characters that were around the edges of that meeting, which also gives you a sense. And it's important to note here that we asked and heard about the issue of the HOPE Act. And one of the workers, leaders of the union, told us straight up that the HOPE Act just doesn't even matter. It's not honored, or that it doesn't do anything to improve people's lives, that the International Labor Conventions of the ILO and things that have been passed from the UN that have been ratified by the Haitian government are a total dead letter.
Convention internationale 89 là, Haïti ciel, yo pas respecté.
In Haiti, the International Convention of 1989 is not respected, but it is ratified in Haiti.
Loi HOPE là yo ciel pour grand merci.
The HOPE law is ratified also in vain.
Bénéficier patron lié.
It's an advantage for the bosses.
Ouvriers pas bénéficier par eux.
The workers don't have any advantage.
Nous pas gain loi logement.
We don't have law about housing.
Petit nous pas gain loi l'éducation.
Our children doesn't have right to be educated.
Et les filles encore nous pas gain machine de transport pour nous payer, nous pas gain l'argent, yo pas supporter nous, yo pas considérer car nous-mêmes.
There isn't any bus, any way of transportation. We don't have either fees to come to work and to go back home.
Bus cap bay travail, bus cap bay patron yo travail en Haïti.
The bosses that are hired people in Haiti.
Mwen ta reme yo fè patrou exijans.
We would like that they ask the bosses
avan yo ba yo travay pou respekte nou menm ouvriye avan.
Before we're talking about the international bosses, they have to respect the workers in Haiti before they hire them in the level international.
Lè sa nou ta wè san nou suspann souci pou grand mèsi pou suspann TB a travè faktou.
Like this, they will stop sucking our blood in Haiti.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's thousands of people working in these places. And we got there right at sort of the end of the working day. So you could see hundreds of people just streaming out of the place. And really, and right outside the gates, by the way, there's a giant market talking about the informal sector selling things. But you can just see right there off the bat that really the root cause of the anger that people have here in Haiti is that you have immense wealth, immense human resources, immense human talents, a strong legacy, history, many natural resources and other things that the country has been endowed with. And all of it is essentially squandered from the point of view of average everyday people. Maybe not from the elites who are taking their slice of what they're selling off to the international companies, but certainly from the point of view of Haitian people, totally squandered. And to see, you know, what's happening just day to day, how people are forced to live in really, truly some of, you know, the most atrocious conditions in some of these areas we went to. They call them slums, many of them, La Saline and others. And, you know, to an extent they are, but I think in a way, for those of us looking at the first world, we have to recognize how that also dehumanizes the people there. But these people are fully aware of the injustice of their situation. And that's why neighborhoods like Bel Air, where we were today as well, have been centers of popular resistance. I mean, Bel Air, where we were able to see, you know, the wreckage of homes that were burned. The people in the neighborhood told us they were burned by supporters of the government to intimidate people from protesting and to intimidate people from forming any sort of opposition. But this neighborhood has really been the center of opposition to many things. Certainly one of the centers of opposition to the coup against Aristide, against the UN forces, against the government currently. It also is one of the areas hardest hit by the earthquake in 2010. So it's a popular neighborhood that's experienced a lot of terrible deprivation, but really is fighting back and is fighting back in a major way. And that was, you know, something that we got quite a bit from people telling us they were not afraid. They were going to continue to move forward. They were, you know, just going to do whatever it took to keep their fight going. And I thought that was extremely impressive, given the fact that, I mean, we were told excruciating stories. I'm bringing them to you now. We can't even share with you even the audio of these stories because we were told by people in the neighborhood that any international media is listened to and watched. So it's not just faces on videos or photos. Even their voices, if they were recognized, could lead to people being executed. We were told of a taxi driver who was cut all over his body and then burned to death. I mean, many, many things. And the evidence of quite a few shootouts were all over the place. So it was you know, harrowing in many ways to see, but actually quite encouraging and inspiring to hear how people were just not cowed and just not giving up. And I think that was another piece of it, is that people were really looking to tell their stories. They wanted people to hear, whether it's the workers, whether it's people in Bel Air, wherever we were going, people want, those of us who are listening to this, certainly, but the, you know, so-called international community, people who don't live in Haiti, but especially people who live in the U.S. and Canada and France and these big countries, to know about this and to solidarize with their struggle. So there's a lot going on here in Haiti. There's obviously the popular struggle. There's obviously the deep deprivation, and there are deep, deep wells of resistance. We also had the opportunity today to attend a meeting of a socialist group at a university. It was about 100 students, very vibrant meeting, a lot of good conversation about what is happening in the world today and the broader contradictions, and a lot of solidarity, by the way, with Latin America, especially Venezuela and Cuba, was expressed by many of the participants. So that also was a very interesting piece at the State University. UEH is the acronym there of that that institution of higher education. So, you know, one thing I will also say, just maybe from a personal point, we also were stopped for lunch and had shaka, which is sort of what I was told, a traditional national Haitian dish, which was fantastic. So just want to add that parenthetically, fresh greased tamarindo juice. It was amazing. So, I mean, obviously we're seeing a lot of terrible things, but I think we're also seeing a lot of beautiful things, not just the resistance of the people, but the physical beauty of the country, and the true beauty of the people, just beyond even the sort of political resistance. You know, we didn't, as terrible as it is, we talked to a lot of people who are upbeat and excited and very interested to hear about what's going on where we are. I mean, almost everywhere we went, people asked us to introduce ourselves as well. And you know, I think that level of curiosity and other pieces was just also a great part of our experience in exchanging with people so far today. So far, so good. A lot more to see, a lot more to do here in Haiti. But we really were able to see, I think, the breadth and the depth of the roots of the problems, and also the roots of the resistance.